we're just seconds away from a conversation with author and journalist Laura Rowley. Laura will be with the Greater Des Moines Partnership on the 5th of September talking about the future of retail. But today, you can get a sneak peek. We'll talk about big box, mom and pop, consumer trends, and using social media wisely. Doing battle in retail? Join us coming up next. Inside on Business, the News Hour is made possible through the support of AARP Iowa. AARP Iowa is offering real possibilities in a host of areas, from civic engagement to building more livable communities. AARP Iowa, real possibilities. And Country Vet Naturals, natural goodness in every bag of this Iowa-made dog and cat food and treats. Learn more at countryvetnaturals.com. Country Vet, loved by pets, trusted by owners.
Inside on Business, the News Hour, is brought to you by Tarot International. Achieve, lead, and outclass with Tarot. TERO.com. And the Iowa Business Journals. News and information for small to mid-sized businesses. IowaBusinessJournals.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. With us is Laura Rowley. Now, Laura is former with CNN, former with Huffington Post. She is an author. She is a retail guru, I guess I can say that. Welcome to the Business News Hour, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
You're going to be appearing with the Greater Des Moines Partnership on the 6th, I think, is it?
It's the 5th.
The 5th, I'm sorry, which would be a Wednesday, I think. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be talking about the future of retail, but you're also an author.
Yes.
Which is kind of fun. What have you written about?
So my very first book I wrote was a biography of the Target Corporation, an unauthorized biography that looked at, it was called On Target, How the World's Hottest Retailer Hit a Bullseye. And it looked at what were the underlying values and history that gave rise to its success. Because when you think about it, Target, Walmart, and Kmart all started the same year, 1962. But the only two left are Walmart and Target, and they have very different value propositions. Target is the upscale discounter, and that niche has enabled them to thrive, even as Walmart became the 400-pound gorilla.
And we just had a business news story about Walmart and Target, about how their stock has increased and how their sales have increased and how people seem to be visiting their brick-and-mortar stores more often, which we think is directly attributable to facelifts in their store, new graphics, new people, and paying a wage where they can attract better employees.
Yeah, absolutely. And Target has always done that. Even in the 1970s, in one of their stores, someone in maintenance discovered some concoction that made the floors absolutely shine, and they immediately put it into every single store. So they have always been, since the 60s, focused on the customer experience. And Walmart, in recent years, has caught up a little bit in that department.
Yes. The other book?
I've written five books total. The other retail book I wrote was a biography of Family Dollar stores.
Fabulous stores.
Which is just, it's a fascinating story about a really energetic entrepreneur who started selling, fabric out of his trunk and has grown to this multinational, or this national chain. But it's also interesting that I happened to do that book because that sector of retail, the dollar stores, is one of the ones that's continued to thrive even as the department stores have gone out of business.
Laura, what does that say about our economy as a whole? Because as department stores, and we know Bon-Ton, bankruptcy, Yonkers department store, 103 years or so in Iowa, gone. Mm-hmm. We see this all over the country where retail are leaving malls. They're finding repurpose for malls,
right?
Those types of things. What does that say, though, when we talk about Dollar General or the dollar stores in general having these great sales numbers, and then on the other side, we see an upscale place like Target having great sales numbers? What does that say?
Well, I would say, the trends you see in retail reflect the bifurcation of income in the U.S. I mean, the stores at the upper end, so like the Gucci's of the world, are doing fine. Chanel is doing fine. And at the other end, the treasure hunt discounters like the Marshalls and TJ Maxx and Home Goods, the Aldi's of the world and the grocery side, and the dollar stores are doing really well. So you're seeing, as incomes widen between the wealthiest in the U.S. and the poorest, those are the retail models that are thriving. I mean, but there's also something else, something larger going on here, and that's obviously the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Retail has always changed and thrived and evolved. You know, I mean, the I was looking at some history on this. The receipt was invented in Mesopotamia in 3000 BC.
It's good to know that we're still
And throughout the 20th century, we saw the rise of department stores downtown. We saw the rise of, you know, the first enclosed mall was in the 1950s in Minnesota, of course, because Minnesota doesn't have that
winters
many nice
are a little
outdoor
rough.
Shopping days. You saw the rise of big box stores like the Best Buys, you know, that were focused, or Staples that was focused on a single category, you know, suburban malls. So retail has always evolved, but I think the biggest change was that in 1995, Amazon sold its first book online, and 20 years later, we have $305 billion in online sales. At the same time, the amount of square footage in retail grew about 23% from 95 to 2015, while the U.S. population only grew 14%. So we're overstored. There's too many stores per capita. At the same time that so many people have moved their buying to online.
We are with Laura Rowley, ladies and gentlemen. She's a retail expert who's going to be presenting soon with our friends at the Greater Des Moines Partnership about the future of retail. Let's get into it, shall we?
Sounds good.
What are, and I think many of us know if we're paying attention, but what are the biggest pressures on retail today? Whether it's a mom and pop store that's selling goods, or it's a person selling a service like a plumber or electrician?
Well, I would say, obviously, online is the biggest pressure. I mean, I'll give you an example. I was looking for certain curtains. You know, I didn't go to walk into a retail store. I knew what color I wanted. I knew what length I wanted. I knew what size I wanted. I went online and found it within 30 seconds from an online retailer. On the other hand, people still want to feel and touch and smell. And, you know, I'm not going to buy my groceries online. I need to, like, touch the fruit myself. So from the pressure side, online is a pressure. The fact that there's too many stores. The fact that from 95 to 2015, some of those malls were built in not great locations, too far from population centers. So those are some of the pressures. Too many stores, not exactly in the right location. Huge influx of dollars online. However, there are a number of models that are thriving.
And let's talk about the way that retail can potentially fight back. We happen to think that customer service and customer loyalty is a big thing that you can't get. Will that drive people to brick-and-mortar retail versus online if the prices are similar? What do you think?
Well, it's interesting because there's two trends happening. If you look at a company like Warby Parker, which is where I buy all my eyeglasses, you know, because, you know, I was able to get glasses for $100 cheaper by sending them my prescription. They send you a bunch of glasses to try on, and then you tell them which ones you want, and they ship it to you. But when I was in New York, I went into a Warby Parker store. Because I wanted to see what else they had. I kind of wanted that experience. So at the end of 2018, Warby Parker will have 100 brick-and-mortar stores. Because the online retailers are recognizing that to have a robust relationship with the consumer, they have to have an in-person experience as part of their experience. And then on the other side, the really smart retailers. You look at a Best Buy. I mean, Best Buy was you know,
they were on the ropes.
They were on the ropes several years ago. They have completely completely evolved their retail model so that you can shop online, you can go to their store, you can have someone come to your house and help figure out exactly what you should buy and how you should, you know, the components that you would need for the picture and the sound you want. So there's the omnichannel, the retailers that are doing omnichannel really well are also thriving.
What about the folks that don't have as deep pockets as the big brand names that are out there and the big box stores and those with huge footprints and already doing e-commerce to the hilt? What can they do? What can mom and pop on Main Street do to survive in this time of the attack on retail?
Well, I would say there's two things that would align with the trends that are currently happening. One is experiential. Right. I mean, millennials in particular love experiences. In 2016, for the first time, Americans spent more money at restaurants and bars than they did on groceries. So they love to have that. I mean, and I think personally, philosophically, I think it's a function of social media, right? You're on your phone all day, but you're not actually connecting with anybody in a, you know, real in-person way, right? So there's this trend toward experiences. So I think the retailers that are creating in-store experiences, whether it's like wine tasting or music of some kind or an art exhibit, and you combine that with a retail experience, that's one way to draw traffic. The other is to really be savvy about social media. Yeah. I mean, the smart retailers who are around me geographically, the boutiques, know how or can get into my Facebook feed. And that's one of the ways I discover things to do in Des Moines is it's popping up in my feed because my friends are liking it. So social media is a crucial marketing tool for smaller retailers to develop a following. A friend of mine is very into rowing. He rowed for Yale, and his friend just opened an indoor rowing boutique downtown so that you can row in Des Moines in the winter. You know, I found out about that on social. Yeah. So I think you can't underestimate the power of social, of friends referring something they like, and retailers should really embrace that.
One of the things with retail and independent business people all over, and we have that same conversation with them through our advertising agency, these are the things that you need to pay attention to. But what they'll say to us is, I don't have time.
Yeah.
I just don't have the time. I'm ordering this. I'm doing HR. I'm doing all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working in my business rather than on my business.
I would take a cue from Target. When I wrote about the company's history, one of the things that they decided to do was sort of target the brand ambassadors. So they said, I don't need to tell 1,000 people. I need to tell 5 really enthusiastic people, and they'll tell 1,000 people. So even, you know, with my example of the rowing store, someone who was passionate about rowing told me about that business. I didn't need to hear it from the business owner. And Target would do this too. They launched a series of ads in the early 2000s that were really forward thinking. You know, they used a photographer who had done photos for Vogue, and they used an ad agency in New York that was really, really forward. And they did a series, I don't know if you remember this, a really series of funny ads where they would have a woman dressed like the Victorian era or the Elizabethan era, and she would have an air filter around her neck as part of the costume.
Right, right.
They were mixing sort of fashion imagery with their products that
your
you
product.
Find in a Target. And that's what people started talking about them. It created a lot of buzz. So if you can create some buzz with some brand ambassadors, you can compound the impact of your marketing.
We're talking with Laura Rowley, who's going to be presenting on September 5th. To the Greater Des Moines Partnership about the future of retail. And she has tons of experience in that silo. All right. So we've got social media. We've got brand ambassadors or brand warriors out there doing our thing. How do retailers, or how should retailers, be paying attention to consumer trends? And how important is that in retail success moving forward?
That's a tough one, because I know when you're running a business, you're running a business. I mean, you have a lot on your plate. Retail, to me, is one of the most complex and amazing businesses. You have supply chain, you have marketing, you have customer service, you have, you know, staying on trend. It's really a challenging business. So, you know, I think if you're a person who reads the news, and, you know, reads your trade publications, you're going to see what the trends are. I mean, one of the big trends, you know, this, I keep going back to the rowing store, but one of the trends is towards health and fitness.
Right.
And so you're seeing where in some malls, the stores that are going out are being replaced by yoga and chiropractors and fitness centers.
Absolutely.
And
right.
Part of that is because, you know, 10 years ago, you were not going to wear your Lululemon into the grocery store. Today you can. I was actually in Whole Foods the other day and saw somebody walking through Whole Foods pushing a grocery cart wearing, you know, capri leggings and a bra top.
Yeah.
Who had literally just come from the gym. Now that, you know, is acceptable now, where it wasn't in the past. So that's a big trend in terms of fitness. The other piece I would say is try to build community. I go to a yoga studio, and really part of their business model is creating a sense of community in the way they start the class, the way they end the class, the way they encourage interaction, events that they throw that encourage a sense of community so that people become friends. And that creates a loyalty to that retail establishment that you wouldn't otherwise have.
Laura Rowley, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the future of retail. Let's talk for just a moment about all the noise, though, that's out there. There is so much noise.
Yeah.
And cutting through that noise to make an impact can be difficult if you're not in tune with your customers or the trends or your future customers.
Right.
Would that be accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's interesting is that the online companies that are now doing bricks and mortar stores have such an advantage because they already have all the data. They know where their customers are centered. They know what products they buy. They know what time of year they order. So they can make a whole range of data-driven business decisions. So again, I come back to, you know, a company in terms of trying to at least make some inroads into being omnichannel, because the data that you'll get from the online behavior of your customers will help you build a better brick-and-mortar business.
Her name is Laura Rowley. She will be presenting at the Greater Des Moines Partnership on the 5th day of September. I believe there are still opportunities for you to register to attend, and she's going to be talking about the future of retail. We could spend an hour on this, Laura.
Absolutely.
We really could. Because this is fascinating stuff and how it's all changing. And yet, I come into contact, as you do, with many retailers who are either just blind to it or they're just stuck in a rut and doing things the same way.
Yeah, it's a really challenging time to be in retail, I have to say. You know, Godspeed, because it's changing really quickly. I mean, I would say there is good news. You have to look, despite the fact that we had 25 major retailers declare bankruptcy last year, there were actually more store openings than there were closures.
Sure, there were.
Across the U.S.
But we focus on the store closings.
Of course, because it's like the screaming headline. I looked at last quarter, 73% of companies in Thomson Reuters Retail Restaurant Index beat earnings expectations. That's really healthy. The economy overall is really healthy. Unemployment is historically low. Inflation is modest. Corporate profits are up. I mean, consumer spending is up. Business sentiment and consumer sentiment is up. So there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. And I think retailers can tap into some of that. You know, it's not all gloom and doom, and it's definitely not a retail apocalypse.
Yep. Laura Crawley, you can catch her with the Greater Des Moines Partnership on 5 September. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Again, this is a fascinating bit of information and conversation that I hope people take to heart.
Thank you, Michael.